Good morning. My name is Sally, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Fifth Third Bank First Quarter 2014 Earnings Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Jim Eglseder, Director of Investor Relations, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, Sally. Good morning. Today, we'll be talking with you about our first quarter 2014 results. This call may contain certain forward-looking statements about Fifth Third pertaining to our financial condition, results of operations, plans, and objectives. These statements involve certain risks and uncertainties. There are a number of factors that could cause results to differ materially from historical performance and these statements. We've identified some of these factors in our forward-looking cautionary statement at the end of our earnings release and in other materials, and we encourage you to review them. Fifth Third undertakes no obligation and would not expect to update any such forward-looking statements after the date of this call. I am joined on the call by several people, our CEO, Kevin Kabat, and CFO, Tayfun Tuzun. Frank Forrest, Chief Risk Officer, Treasurer Jamie Leonard, and Jeff Richardson, Director of Capital Planning. During the question-and-answer period, please provide your name and that of your firm to the operator. With that, I'll turn the call over to Kevin Kabat. Kevin?
Thanks, Jim. We reported first quarter net income to common shareholders of $309 million and earnings per diluted share of $0.36. Significant items during the quarter included a $36 million negative valuation on the Vantive warrant, litigation reserve charges of $51 million, and a few other items that Tayfun will cover. These items reduced EPS in the quarter by approximately $0.07. Additionally, we recognized charge-offs of about $60 million on three relatively large credits, led to higher charge-offs during the quarter than expected. Our credit outlook for the remainder of the year hasn't changed, absent the impact of these credits. Each of these situations had unique characteristics that led to charge-offs. We don't believe this is indicative of a change in direction of the broader portfolio. Highlights in the quarter included 3% growth in both average core and transaction deposits. Year-over-year, core deposits were up 8%, and transaction deposits were up 9%. For the quarter, average portfolio loans grew 2% sequentially, and period-end portfolio loans increased $1.1 billion, or 1%. Average commercial loan balances were up 3% sequentially, led by C&I growth of 4% over last quarter. Commercial real estate average balances continued their rebound, driven primarily by construction loans, with total commercial real estate balances up 1% sequentially. Excluding mortgage revenues, which continue to decline, fee income results were solid, even though they exhibited some seasonal trends. I would add that the lower levels of consumer fee income relative to what we expected coming into the quarter exhibited more than the normal seasonal softness, whether it was debit, credit activity, ATM, account and household activity in the branches, all were a bit lighter than expected in the first quarter. We still have enough of our footprint in parts of the country that were significantly impacted by the severe weather in January and February, and we did see activity pick up in March. I don't know that we'll ever get that lost activity back, but certainly the March trends continued into April are much more in line with what we've seen historically and supported by solid household growth and other trends resulting from our consumer bank redesign. Highlights in the quarter were corporate banking fees up 11% sequentially and 6% from a year ago. Also, investment advisors had a record quarter, was up 4% sequentially, led by solid production from our private banking business and higher trust tax fees. Our private banking business, which is a little under half of that total business line in aggregate, showed year-over-year growth of 8% and sequential growth of 11%. We continue to manage costs in a disciplined manner. Quarterly expenses decreased 4% sequentially, driven primarily by a reduction in total employee costs. That includes the impact of seasonally higher benefits expense. If you exclude the litigation charges in the quarter, non-interest expenses were approximately $900 million, the lowest level on that basis in several years. Overall, this was a strong quarter in terms of core controllable expense management. Capital levels remained very strong. Our Tier 1 common ratio was 9.5% on a Basel I basis, and 9.1% pro forma for U.S. Basel III rules. Our ability to generate capital and our strong capital position under current and future capital rules give us the ability to support balance sheet growth while continuing to return capital to shareholders in a prudent manner. During the quarter, we announced and completed the repurchase of roughly $100 million of common stock, which completed our 2013 CCAR plan. Also in March, we announced our capital plan relating to the 2014 CCAR process. That plan included a potential dividend increase during the CCAR period up to 13 cents, as well as up to $669 million of share repurchases. We also will be able to utilize any after-tax gains from sales of Vantive shares for additional repurchases. We think our plan is prudent while still returning significant amounts of capital to shareholders, and we believe that our stressed results demonstrate our robust capacity to withstand stress conditions and maintain a strong capital position. While there was a bit of noise in the quarter, we expect a return to previous charge-off trends, although results may be lumpy from time to time. Regulatory and litigation costs in this environment are challenging, but we would not expect them to remain at this level. And we feel good about our investment in Vantive, although as a mark-to-market instrument, our warrant will likely continue to add some volatility to reported results. Core operating results were otherwise generally strong, and as Tayfun will discuss, we currently expect second quarter results to return to trend. I'll turn it over to him now to discuss the operating results in more detail and give some comments about our outlook. Tayfun?
Thank you, Kevin. Good morning, and thank you for joining us. I'll start with the financial summary on page 4 of the presentation. There were a number of moving parts to the quarter, which Kevin mentioned in his remarks. EPS were affected by elevated litigation reserve charges, as well as the mark on the Vantive warrant, which have been mostly upwards the past couple of years. We reported net income to common shareholders of $309 million, or 36 cents per diluted share. The negative Vantive warrant valuation mark of $36 million and seasonal declines in some fee items drove non-interest income lower compared with last quarter. Expenses were well controlled despite a seasonal increase in benefits expense and reflected the impact of further efficiencies in our mortgage and retail businesses. Commercial loan and core deposit growth were solid and in line with our expectations. We continue to believe that our underlying trends and our focus on executing our strategic plan position us very well for the remainder of the year. Turning to the average balance sheet and page 5 of the presentation. Average earning assets increased 1% sequentially, driven by higher loan balances and investments. Total average commercial loans grew $1.7 billion, or 3%, with good production in middle market C&I, commercial real estate, and our other specialty lending businesses, including healthcare. Average balances also benefited from a 1% uptick in line utilization during the quarter to 30%. On the consumer side, held for investment loan balances were flat on a linked quarter basis, with growth in residential mortgage, credit card, and auto loans offset by lower home equity balances. Investment securities increased by $2 billion, or 11%, reflecting our incremental purchases of highly liquid assets. Turning to deposits, average core deposits increased by $2.2 billion, or 3%, in the first quarter, driven primarily by average balance growth. This was due to growth in checking balances, as well as new money market account relationships and longer duration retail CDs. Taking a look at NII on page 6 of the presentation. As expected, taxable equivalent net interest income decreased $7 million sequentially to $898 million, driven by a $12 million negative impact from two fewer days in the quarter. Otherwise, the net addition of about $2.1 billion of investment securities and commercial loan growth drove a sequential increase in net interest income. These benefits offset the negative effects of loan repricing, higher deposit balances, and debt issuances from the last two quarters. These activities were generally consistent with our plans coming into the quarter, and we feel we've made very good progress toward exceeding the LCR limit. We will likely continue with similar actions over the course of the year, which may affect them somewhat, but they should not affect NII. As we expected in our outlook in January, the net interest margin came in relatively stable at 322 basis points, up 1 basis point from the fourth quarter. The benefits of lower cash balances held at the Fed, day count, and the full quarter impact of the fourth quarter TRUPS redemption offset the effects of loan repricing and the recent debt issuances. Shifting to fees on page 7 of the presentation. First quarter non-interest income was $564 million compared with $703 million last quarter. The most significant impact sequentially was the Vantive warrant valuation, which experienced a $127 million swing from the fourth quarter, primarily due to the 7% decline in Vantive's share price. Despite this quarter's decline, Vantive's share price has increased 48% since the beginning of 2013, and we have recorded $171 million in positive valuation adjustments on our warrants during that period. Seasonally lower deposit service charges and card and processing revenue, as well as lower mortgage banking revenue, each reduced fee income in the quarter. Mortgage originations were $1.7 billion this quarter, compared with $2.6 billion in originations last quarter. Gain on sale revenue declined $19 million from the prior quarter, reflecting lower originations and gain on sale margins, which declined 22 basis points sequentially to 242 basis points. MSR valuation adjustments, including hedges, were a positive $28 million in the fourth quarter, compared with a positive $26 million last quarter. Other highlights of the quarter included an 11% increase in corporate banking revenue and a 4% increase in investment advisory revenue to a record $102 million, driven by seasonal trust tax preparation fees, growth in personal assets under management, and higher market values. On a year-over-year basis, all main fee categories showed growth other than mortgage. Our operating platform is strong, and we've demonstrated great versatility in managing our fee-generating businesses, which is a very good indicator of our ability to successfully transition from periods of peak mortgage activity. Non-interest expense shown on page 8 of the presentation was $950 million this quarter, compared with $989 million in the fourth quarter. Expense results included $51 million in litigation reserve charges, a seasonal $24 million increase in FICA and unemployment tax expense, and $4 million in severance expense. Adjusting for these items and seasonal increases, expenses declined 5% compared with the fourth quarter. Compensation-related expense declined 7% sequentially, largely due to two key drivers. We continue to rationalize our mortgage business line in line with lower production levels. Since the second quarter of 2013, we've taken out $55 million of mortgage costs, including an additional $5 million in the first quarter. In addition to mortgage, the changes in the retail banking environment, our investments in and the success of our digital platforms, and our strategic decisions on branch design and staffing have enabled us to enhance our services while also reducing branch costs, which are down $29 million on a full-year run rate basis since the first quarter of 2013, primarily due to lower FTE costs. We've made a lot of progress. We are in a very good competitive position relative to our peers, and we believe that there is more opportunity as we continue to evolve our structure. All-in PPNR, shown on page 9 of the presentation, was $507 million. When adjusted for the items noted on the slide, PPNR was $590 million, down about 5% from the fourth quarter adjusted PPNR. This decline was primarily driven by the seasonal increase in FICA and unemployment tax expense. Adjusted for this seasonal uptick, PPNR was $614 million. The efficiency ratio, adjusted on the same basis, was 60% for the quarter. We still expect our efficiency ratio to decline below 60% during the second half of the year. Turning to credit results on page 10 and starting with charge-offs. Total net charge-offs of $168 million increased $20 million sequentially. Consumer net charge-offs declined $7 million. As Kevin mentioned, first quarter commercial charge-offs included three larger credits that added $60 million to the quarter. These credits represent three unique sets of circumstances, and I'll spend a few moments on each. They do not share geographic characteristics, and they were not leveraged or syndicated credits. Each contributed about $20 million in losses during the quarter. The remainder of our losses were more typical and range from 0 to $7 million. The first of these credits was a letter of credit that was extended to a public entity a number of years ago. Deterioration in its financial situation led to the outcome. We have no other public entity exposure of this size and nature, and there is no change in our expectations for the rest of this portfolio. The second credit was an exposure to a company where there is currently an investigation underway regarding potential financial irregularities. We need to wait until our analysis is complete, but once again, our credit team believes that the nature of the disruption is unique to this transaction. The third credit was to a company that recently lost key contracts, which had a negative impact on its financial performance and subsequently led to default on our loan. Although the higher than anticipated losses this quarter have the effect of increasing our expected charge-offs for the full year, we have not seen a change in the broader credit trends in our portfolio. As a result, our outlook for charge-offs for the remainder of the year has not changed. In terms of our other credit trends, commercial early-stage delinquencies, criticized asset levels, and NPAs all declined relative to the fourth quarter. Total delinquencies of $337 million declined $42 million, or 11%, and included only $10 million of commercial loans. Looking across the page, non-performing assets of $946 million at quarter end were down $34 million, or 4%, from the fourth quarter. The improvement was due to a $25 million sequential decline in commercial real estate NPAs and a $22 million decline in residential mortgage NPAs, partially offset by a $14 million increase in C&I NPAs. Reserve coverage remained solid at 1.65% of loans and leases. The allowance for loan and lease losses declined $99 million, sequentially reflecting the portfolio's overall risk profile and charges to the allowance. Page 11 of the presentation includes a roll forward of non-performing loans. Commercial inflows in the first quarter were $163 million, up $56 million from the fourth quarter, largely driven by inflows from the credits I discussed earlier. Consumer inflows for the quarter were $93 million, down $72 million sequentially, reflecting the fourth quarter change in our home equity non-accrual policy. Turning to capital on slide 12, capital levels continue to be well above regulatory requirements. The Tier 1 common equity ratio was 9.5%, up 12 basis points from last quarter. Changes in capital ratios reflected growth in retained earnings beyond the impact of dividend and share repurchase activity. We completed the repurchases related to our 2013 capital plan in the first quarter. Repurchases in 2013 and the first quarter of 2014 totaled 73 million shares, including those related to after-tax gains on the sale of Vantive shares. Our repurchases have driven significant declines in our fully diluted share count, down over 100 million shares or 10% from their peak, while at the same time maintaining common equity capital ratios significantly above regulatory minimums. The Federal Reserve's 2014 CCAR review is complete, and we received no objection to our capital plan. We believe our results demonstrate the relative strength of our capital position and our ability to absorb significant stress. Given our capacity for internal capital generation, we would expect to continue to prudently return additional capital to shareholders under our 2014 CCAR plan. Now turning to the outlook page on page 13. We've updated parts of the slide to reflect any changes to our full-year expectations, but in general, our first quarter results did not have a significant impact other than on charge-offs, as I already mentioned. I would note that, as in the past, comparisons with 2013 exclude the impact of any gains on Vantive share sales, and changes in warrant value in 2014 and 2013, as indicated in the footnote on the slide. Our NII, NIM, and balance sheet expectations are unchanged from our January guidance, so I'll start with net interest income. We expect full year 2014 NII to increase from full year 2013 NII of $3.6 billion in the 2% growth range. The key drivers of the 2014 growth are loan growth and higher investment securities balances, partially offset by increased funding costs and some additional loan spread compression. We still expect NII to trend up throughout the year. We anticipate a full-year NIM in the 315 basis point range, plus or minus, and again unchanged from the January guidance as we continue to add LCR-friendly portfolio investments and see loan spread compression. Turning to loan growth, we still expect mid-single-digit growth for the full-year average, primarily driven by continued growth in C&I, as well as growth in commercial real estate. These increases will be partially offset by declines in residential mortgage balances and continued runoff in the home equity portfolio. We expect both commercial and consumer deposits to increase. Moving on to overall fee income and expense expectations for 2014. As a reminder, these comparisons exclude $534 million in 2013 fee income related to gains on Vantive sales and changes in the warrant value. Our 2014 guidance likewise excludes any effect from Vantive events other than our normal recurring income. Overall, we currently expect a mid to high single-digit decline in total fee income in 2014 compared with adjusted fee income in 2013, primarily reflecting a forecast reduction in mortgage banking revenue of about $325 million. The forecasted reduction in mortgage revenue is about $50 million more than we expected in January, primarily reflecting continued softening in originations and the impact of our decision to exit the broker channel that we announced in March. Excluding mortgage, we expect fees to grow in the mid-single digits range in aggregate versus 2013, with growth in all other fee categories. Looking at the details within fees, we'd expect to see mid-single digit percentage growth in deposit fees. We've brought our expectations here down a bit, reflecting a moderation in both consumer and commercial service charges. We continue to expect investment advisory revenue growth in the 10% range, corporate banking revenue growth in the mid-teens range, and card and processing revenue growth in the mid to high single digits range. And lastly, as I mentioned, we currently expect mortgage banking revenue to decline about $325 million from 2013. We currently expect originations and gain on sale revenue to be fairly consistent throughout the last three quarters of the year. Turning to expenses. We expect full-year non-interest expense to be down in the mid-single digits relative to reported 2013 expenses. I would note that we've been managing our expenses very carefully, and given the revised outlook in some of our fee categories, we would also expect to reduce expenses, although this is on a large base, so it does not change our numerical percentage guidance. We will continue to manage expenses carefully and aggressively in line with revenue results and the economic environment. Overall, we still expect to achieve positive core operating leverage in 2014, excluding Vantive, and we expect PPNR growth in the low single digits range for the year. And importantly, we still expect the efficiency ratio to move below 60% in the second half of the year. As for taxes, we expect the full year 2014 effective tax rate to be in the 27 to 27.5% range. Turning to credit, we've adjusted our outlook for full-year net charge-offs upward by about $60 million to reflect the elevation in first-quarter charge-offs. That translates to about 50 basis points for the year. There was no meaningful change otherwise to our outlook for the last three quarters of the year as we continue to see improvements in overall credit quality metrics, including non-performing and criticized assets. We still expect a significant decline in the NPAs, down about 15% from last year's levels, and for the NPA ratio to move solidly below 1% during the year. With respect to loan loss reserves, we continue to expect the benefit of improvement in credit results to be partially offset by new reserves related to loan growth. Finally, a housekeeping note. The segment reporting that we provide on page 34 of the earnings release reflects a reorganization of our business banking unit, which primarily impacted the commercial and branch banking segment disclosures. This change was also applied retrospectively to our segment reporting and is reflected in all periods presented. In summary, the strong fundamental progress in our business was obscured to some extent this quarter. However, the strong momentum in our core businesses and our ability to make progress on our strategic initiatives is generating core PPNR growth in what remains a challenging environment for banking institutions. We are improving efficiency while investing in our business, and we believe we remain well positioned as we progress through the year. That wraps up my remarks. Sally, can you open the line for questions, please?
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Paul Miller with FBR. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Jessica Ribner. Hey, good morning. This is actually Jessica Ribner for Paul. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks. Just a couple of questions. The first is, how much more room do you think you guys have for reserve releases in the coming quarters, given that you're at 165 basis point reserve ratio?
Yeah, in general, we've not provided forward-looking guidance on reserves other than saying that in 2014, our reserves are likely to be lower than in 2013, and we'll probably stick to that guidance. I mean, we have a very solid ratio at 165, and we feel very comfortable with the credit profile of our balance sheet, and in that respect, we would still expect that number to go down. But beyond that, in this environment, it is difficult to provide a more precise outlook for reserves.
Okay, thank you. And then just one question on the mortgage banking side. I know you mentioned during the call that you don't expect to see a pickup above last year or even to last year's level, but what are you seeing in the spring buying season? Is it encouraging for the rest of the year?
It is a little bit too early to tell. I mean, we clearly are now entering the high season and coming out of a very cold winter in our footprint in the Midwest. It's early to tell, but so far I think originations are moving along as expected.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Ken Houston with Jefferies. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tayfun, I was wondering on the expense side, when you guys talk about the outlook, you're working off of last year's reported. So if I look at 950 of reported expenses with the 51 litigation and severance and the 24 seasonal increase, I was wondering if you could just level set us on how we should think about the progression off the first quarter. Do we start at 875 and then move from there?
Well, obviously the first quarter, excluding the one-timers that you just mentioned, the number is below $900 million, including the $24 million in employee-related seasonal numbers. Going forward, we probably will be up a little bit, but the remainder of the year should be stable. So we shouldn't see quarter-to-quarter changes. Relatively, though, compared to the adjusted number, our expenses will probably inch up.
And can you talk to me? So I just want to ask you to explain through that. So if you've got the seasonal 24, what would the seasonal 24 be completely replaced by if you're talking about, you know, mortgage continuing to be a little bit soft and underneath?
Yeah, we will, there's a little bit of seasonality in our marketing expense. You will see that, you know, in the second and third quarters of the year. Beyond that, you know, there are really small changes in different line items, nothing big quarter to quarter. In mortgage, just because production goes up in the second and third quarter, you will see some uptick in base compensation expense, probably just for a couple of quarters, and will subside towards the end of the year. Other than that, it really is sort of across the board distributed, nothing meaningful in any one line item.
Okay, and then on the capital side, you talk about your thoughts about it's tricky to understand the forwards versus the approvals that you got on this year's CCAR. So how do we think about how you are thinking about this year in terms of getting through the new approval and any change in your view about continuing to monetize the Vantive?
Yeah, so on capital, you know, when you look at our 2013 CCAR plan, what we announced at the beginning of that period and what we executed was very much in line. So we fully executed our 2013 capital plan. Our expectation is that, you know, we will fully execute our 2014 capital plan as we disclosed in March with $669 million in buybacks and a potential increase in dividends to 13 cents. And those are obviously subject to board approval and, you know, financial conditions. But in general, our expectations would be the same as 2013. With respect to Vantive, we own 25% of the company right now. The company is doing very well, but we've publicly stated that our long-term strategic goal is not to maintain a large ownership in a publicly traded company, and we will execute on that plan. You will likely see sales this year. It's difficult to predict the timing, what we laid out in our plan last year with respect to our thoughts in Vantive, we will continue to execute this year.
Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Scott Seifers with Sandler O'Neill. Your line is open.
Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, guys. Hey, Tessman, I was wondering if you could just speak broadly to commercial pricing dynamics that you're seeing, and just as you look at the prospect of additional pressure on the NIM, how heavily it's weighted toward pricing issues versus, you know, things like continuing to do liquidity build and prep for LCR, things of that nature.
I'll make some general comments, and then I'll turn it over to Jamie to comment on his actions with respect to liquidity. In general, the market continues to be competitive, you've seen that from other peer banks as well. We are maintaining a very tight discipline around pricing and around credit attached to those pricing levels. And we are likely to see more compression in commercial loans. We've seen some comments about pricing in commercial real estate. Where we play there is a bit different, and the long-term commercial mortgage product doesn't necessarily fit our balance sheet, so we're not competing in that segment where a lot of the insurance companies and pension funds appear to have increased their focus. In commercial lending, C&I per se, we are seeing continued price compression, although quarter over quarter comparisons in our commercial is a bit misleading because we had a couple of moving parts in Q4 to our benefit and a couple that went against us this year. So, Jamie, do you want to comment on how you see spread compression coming from commercial versus everything else that you're doing on the balance sheet?
Sure, Tuckman. And Scott, it's Jamie.
Hey, Jamie.
NIM outlook on 2Q. As Tyson mentioned in his prepared remarks, we're continue to expect a NIM of in 2014 of about 3.15. I think that is where the second quarter should end up, and the moving parts there, 1 to 2 bips of loan yield compression, a couple bips decline due to day count, and then the remainder being the impact of the additional portfolio leverage and then the funding costs to go along with it. And again, I think we managed the first quarter very effectively. We're pleased with the outcome at being up a bip while continuing to add the portfolio leverage. And a lot of that was due to continued discipline in pricing in commercial, auto, and mortgage.
Okay, that's perfect. Thank you very much for the color.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Matt O'Connor with Deutsche Bank. Your line is open.
Morning, Matt.
Hey, you actually have Dan from Matt's team. Quick question on fees. With the fee income guidance coming down this quarter and some of the businesses like investment advisory and deposit fees, is that primarily due to a weaker January and February with the weather, or are you seeing activity a bit lower than expected?
No, look, I mean, I think, you know, we want to make sure that we provide you guys with an updated, realistic look. And clearly, the first quarter activity, as Kevin mentioned in his opening remarks, was lower than we expected, and whether it was due to weather or, you know, something else, at this point we don't want to speculate. But we've seen the pickup in March. We've seen very good household buildup in March and into April here, which should be indicative of, you know, a little bit of a better direction in consumer-related fees. In general, our IA business, which is primarily focused on private wealth management and brokerage, is doing very well. Despite the fact that we may have lowered the outlook a little bit, that still is a strong growth business for us. In corporate banking is still expected to be up double digits. So those are very strong numbers. We're not changing the tone of our outlook, but you know, we felt we had to make some adjustments for what we've seen in January and February this quarter so far.
Yeah, said a little bit differently, Dan. It's really difficult to tell you whether or not those fees catch up or they simply trend back. And we're not going to make the assumption that they, you know, we get any kind of catch up from those perspectives, particularly as it relates to the consumer side of the house. It's just we don't think that's a reasonable expectation, and that's why, you know, to Typhoon's point, we've kind of given the guidance that we've given.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Your next question comes from the line of Erica Najarian from Bank of America. Your line is open.
Good morning, Erica.
Good morning. Good morning. My first question is on the efficiency guidance, and it's a bit of a two-parter. Typhoon, I appreciate the color you gave on, you know, breaking the 60% efficiency ratio in the second half of the year. How much does a decline in your litigation reserve accrual play into that guidance? And additionally, could you give us a little bit more color in terms of the opportunity you mentioned to evolve the structure and what that can imply for your efficiency outlook for 2015?
Yes. First of all, I think adjusting for the litigation reserves and the Vantive, our number is already pretty close to 60%. So from here on, we don't forecast additional litigation reserves. So my guidance for the efficiency ratio does not include additional litigation reserves. We would not make that that forecast. We would not build that into our forecast. But we are confident, given the strength in our fee income, our NII increase, you know, 2% year over year, and the ability to manage the expenses down, that we will be able to reach a below 60% efficiency ratio in the second quarter. To those numbers, obviously, we have some expected efficiency gains on the retail side this year, which we would expect to continue into 2015. We are seeing, as we have shared with you in December and again in February, we are tracking consumer behavior very closely. We have a very close eye on what that means for expenses in our branch system. We would expect that behavior to continue to move in our favor. We've seen that in Q1. We have seen increased usage of ATM and digital use in transaction volumes. if that trend continues, and I should say it is likely continue to, from our perspective, we should see increased efficiencies in 2015 in addition to what we are seeing this year.
Got it.
And Erica, just one color on that. That's all while still continuing to invest in our top line, our revenues, and our ability to grow the company from that perspective. So we've got a balanced perspective, and we're trying to make sure that we do what's best for our shareholders long-term, not just short-term, given the environment that we have.
Got it. And a follow-up question is, there's been much talk during this earnings season about leverage loans and shared national credits. Could you give us a sense of, let's say, over the past four quarters, how much leverage lending and shared national credits have contributed to your overall C&I growth, and perhaps remind us how those credits performed during the last two credit cycles for Fifth Third relative to your the rest of your C&I book?
Yes, let me. Thanks for asking the question. It's clearly been discussed in different platforms. First of all, I think relying on third-party information to deduct any type of origination levels for individual banks is extremely difficult, because what's being published and what's been used to support some of the research is totally based on splitting book runner credits without actually looking at how much credit each book runner is keeping from each transaction. So, for example, in 2013, if you look at total league table book runner credits, that's $5.3 billion that's been associated with us. But when you look at actual our total committed level, it's less than half of that amount. And when you look at the outstandings, it's close to only 25% of those amounts. So you can't. It's very difficult to start with the top line, relying on third-party published numbers, and coming up with loans in you know, that hit our balance sheet. And all of that amount, just remember, the way they define loans, all of that amount, only a fraction of the $1.3 billion for 2013 is in leverage loans, and that's probably in the mid-teens. So as you sort of peel the onion, you will get to a number that is much smaller than what the top-line number would indicate. For the first quarter of 2014, if you were to add up the credits that we were part of as a book runner, the gross number would be $2.4 billion. But our committed number total in Q1 was a little less than $700 million, and the loans on our books currently is less than half of that, which is $340 million. And a much smaller amount, is, again, in leverage loans. So one needs to be very careful in terms of interpreting syndicated loan volumes or leverage loan volumes, because what they describe as leverage is truly loans that are below investment grade. Now, how do we sort of view syndicated lending within our commercial business? Syndicated lending is an important part of our business. As you know, over the last 3-4 years, we've been shifting our commercial lending up towards higher end of the corporate borrowing sector, our investments in healthcare, our investments in the energy sector, and our investments in the mid-corporate sector, they all have moved us up in terms of the size of the borrower. So when you look at the borrower, you know, these are companies with $250 million or higher in revenues. Their borrowing needs are going to be larger, and clearly no one bank can handle the entire borrowing needs of those institutions. So we end up basically participating in syndications. And the other misnomer a little bit is people look at the agented volumes and correlate those with leads where banks are participating heavily in either structuring or underwriting the credit. Well, again, very along our strategy in moving up in the size of the borrowers, we also have increased our capacity on the capital market side. And what we're seeing is that in half or even in some quarters, close to two-thirds of these transactions, we are heavily involved in structuring and syndicating these credits. So what's happening today is very much in line with what we expected two, 3 years ago when we ventured into the upgrade in our commercial lending platform and the upgrade in our capital markets platform, and we are seeing the results, and these are expected results. Today, about 39% of our total commercial loans is in syndicated credits. That's a number that we are very comfortable with. In terms of the credit profile of our syndicated book, when you look at the performance of these, what you will see is charge-offs, NPA ratios, non-accruals, half of the remainder of the portfolio. The credit grades in this portfolio are better than the credit grades when you look at the broader commercial portfolio that we own. So, again, what we're trying to do is we're trying to differentiate what it means to be in syndicated lending, the fact that it, you know, it's part of our strategy, and at 39% of commercial loans, we are very comfortable where this portfolio is.
Let me just add, this is Jeff, I think going back to your original question, our leverage portfolio is, using the regulatory definitions, is about $4.8 billion, so less than 10% of our portfolio, and we're also very comfortable.
Yes, and that's
that.
Actually in the slides.
Yes,
we,
and that has not grown over the last 12 to 15 months, so it has not been really a contributor.
And while we're at it, let's clarify one more issue. Covalite lending has been, you know, talked about quite a bit over the last number of quarters. Our exposure to covenant light lending is less than 1% of our portfolio. So, again, it pays to pay attention to the details, and we're providing this disclosure to make sure that the research out there appropriately reflects our exposures.
Well, that is a very complete answer. Thank you. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Kevin St. Pierre with Sanford Bernstein. Your line is open.
Good morning. Good morning. So in the quarter, we saw a significant increase in the loans transferred to non-performing. Is that related to the three commercial credits?
Yes.
Okay. And then if I could just you know, follow up on capital and the CCAR. So 2014, your submission was designed to maintain capital ratios. Do you anticipate a point, be it 2015 or maybe you tell me when we might be able to start managing ratios down to some endpoint target in the eights?
That's a question we ask frequently. We get to, you know, every year prior to our submission of our CCAR package, we have debates here, we have debates with our peers and everything else. It's hard to forecast that, Kevin. In this environment, the regulators are doing a much better job in terms of communicating with us. Every year, this process is getting better. We are learning more about how they view capital management. They are learning more about our processes. We would hope that going forward, this process will continue to evolve in a positive direction as we've seen over the last 2 years.
All right. And maybe if you could remind us of your capital deployment priorities. Obviously, this year it's dividend and share repurchase, but as we get into next year and perhaps ramping up capital return, how you would view M&A, organic growth, share repurchase, what your priorities might be?
Yeah, Kevin, I think the focus for this year is correct and accurate. I'm not sure when or if 15 is significantly different as we get better ideas, we get later in the year, we can give you a little bit better color on what we anticipate. But I wouldn't expect a lot of significant change in terms of the immediate priorities, at least as far as the, at this point.
I think we've said also that we, you know, we're not inclined to pile up capital in case maybe there's an M&A deal in the future. We are managing capital in a general range, and like any company, if an M&A transaction came along, then they adjust their capital activity. So Anything that we ever did that was large, we would probably be issuing shares. And if it were small, we can manage that through adjusting our share repurchases. So our priorities are to hold capital in the general range that it's in and not, worry about future M&A.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, Kevin, we try to be very transparent in terms of the strategy for us, but we have an awful lot of what I refer to as offsheet capital as well to use in case, something attractive to our shareholders came along for us to purpose.
Great. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Brian Foran with Autonomous. Your line is open.
Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. I guess two just clarifications on the guidance. As we think about the asset base to apply the ROA to, I'm just going to streamline my model to two lines. You've been growing faster on assets, or at least the year-over-year on assets is faster than loans held for investment right now. Is that going to continue for the whole year given the liquidity builds, or, is the mid-single-digit held for investment a roughly good guide for total assets as well?
Yeah, I think the way to look at it would be, mid-single-digit growth on loans, high single-digit growth on earning assets, and then somewhere in between on total assets would be the right way to model that.
And then on the deposit advance product, I apologize if I missed it earlier, but can you just remind us what the impact is and the pace of that impact as we move through the year?
Yeah, as you know, we in January announced that we no longer are accepting new customers in that line item. We will continue to service existing customers until the end of the year, and then we will be out of that product completely at the end of this year. In terms of the earnings related to the early access product, those are in other consumer loans and leases category, and a vast majority of that line item belongs to that product. In terms of the outlook as to where that will go, this year clearly we've taken out growth from earnings related to that product, but we will continue to earn. And our teams are currently working diligently for a substitute product. It's too early to tell what that product is going to look like and how to build the earnings capacity of that product into our outlook.
And if I could sneak in one last one, you referenced the pace of mobile banking change. On a couple of the past calls, you've talked about some pilot markets where you're testing out some new branch formats, some new staffing formats. Are there any kind of early learnings from that can help us think about what the framing of the opportunity for 2015 on the branches might be?
Let me answer this second part of your question first. I think it's a bit early to start building expectations for 2015, but when we look at the pilots continue to operate very successfully, and as we've discussed, these tests are designed to address the customers' changing behavioral patterns, and we continue to see uptick in their activity through whether it's the ATM channel, mobile channel. We continue to see changes in the way our teller lines are being utilized. We are very excited about how our newly created job definitions are working in addressing, the combination of sales activity and the teller activity. So whether it's with respect to the quality of customer service or with respect to the efficiencies attached to those changes, we are very encouraged by the signs that we are getting from the tests. And we will share with you as the year goes along, what our expectations would be with respect to 2015, but we'd like to take a little bit more time to read the tea leaves more closely.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Keith Murray with ISI. Your line is open.
Good morning.
Good morning. Just a question on the other non-interest income line. I know it's volatile with the gains, et cetera, but if you back out the impacts from Vantive, let's say the core number was around $76 million this quarter. If you do it for last quarter, we're sort of in the $80+ million range. You think about, you know, your outlook and folks in RC trying to model it. What's kind of a core or average number you think is good to use for other non-interest income?
You know, that line item is a combination of many different details. That includes, for example, our Vantive earnings. That includes our BOLI income and, you know, cardholder fees, et cetera. It's difficult to predict precisely here and give you the guidance outlook. But in general, I would expect over the next 2-3 quarters, you know, the fourth quarter core numbers probably would approximate, you know, what you should expect there.
Okay. And then just going back to the LCR, on top of obviously the impact on net interest margin, et cetera, if you think about it from the cost side and having to calculate it daily potentially, how big of an undertaking is that as far as potential cost and impact on the expenses going forward?
I would say it's not as much the cost to calculate it every day as much as it is the challenge that, you know, our employees will have to dedicate and have been dedicating, you know, months of effort in managing the data, the fields, and staging all of this information, and then the overall IT infrastructure work that has to occur. We can do it all in-house with the systems we have, so it's not a large cost from that perspective. However, it's a lot of manpower to do the LCR calculations, and obviously having the ability to forecast and factor in the volatility from the different deposit bases and mixes that you have is really a challenging thing, and why everybody's focused on having a buffer to the minimum compliance levels. But it's definitely a lot of work, but it shouldn't be a lot of external spend to make that happen.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
There are no further questions at this time. Mr. Eglesetter, I will turn the call back over to you.
Great. Thanks for listening today. I did want to make one clarifying point in our response to a question earlier. I think we mentioned that efficiency ratio would go below 60% in 2Q. That's actually 2.5, so that was not intended to be a change from our expectations, but just so everyone's clear on that. But otherwise, thanks for joining us on the call today. That's all.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.